In Hebrews, on this one, if you have one in your Bible, cross-reference. Hebrews 8, verse 8 to 12. Will be a virtually, it's an exact quotation, or quotation. And it says, "Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah." Notice the new covenant is not with Jehovah's Witnesses or the Catholic Church or the Bride of Christ or Baptist or Israel of God or the Aryan Nations or the British Israelites. It's House of Israel and House of Judah. So he's got them both covered, so the Israelites, the British Israelites, have a hard time with it. Notice the new covenant is the days come, that will be the millennium. Okay, so this is a brand new covenant. As we read down through it further, you'll see that it obviously has not taken place yet. Verse 32, "Not according to the covenant that I made with your fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was an husband unto them, saith the Lord." Okay, that's the covenant he made back in Exodus 24. Exodus 19, verse 3 to 8. And then he sealed that covenant with blood, Exodus 24, verse 6 to 8. That's called the Mosaic Covenant. Notice at the end of verse 32, "I was an husband." I was an husband unto them. Implying that he's not. And what we'll find is in Isaiah 50, verse 1, and Jeremiah 3, verse 8, that God divorced Israel in the Old Testament. Okay, verse 33. "But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days." Again, millennium. After those days refers to the days of the great tribulation. After those days would be the millennium. "Saith the Lord, I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more." Okay, 34, everybody on planet Earth is going to know Jesus Christ. Isaiah 11, verse 9 says, as the waters cover the sea, so they shall know the Lord. Last I checked, there's a lot of water in the sea. A lot of water down in Rensselaer, too. Okay, so everybody on planet Earth during the millennium is going to know Jesus Christ. Now, most Buddhists never even heard of the name Jesus Christ. Hinduists, a lot of them never heard it. Muslims, they've heard of it, but they just know him as some sort of a prophet. Okay, but there's going to be a time where everybody knows the Lord, and it's going to be the millennium. During that time, at the beginning, he says, "I will forgive the iniquity, and I remember their sin no more." That's the nation of Israel. Okay, so we obviously can see from these four verses that this has not taken place yet. And according to Zechariah 13, verse 3 and 4, if anybody would prophesy during the millennium, it warrants a death sentence because they don't need to do that. Because everybody's going to know them. Okay, so today you go out in the streets, talk to people about Jesus Christ, and you'll find some that never heard of him, and some just know head knowledge of him. And you'll find that some people don't know any Bible, none whatsoever. It's downright ridiculous in America. It's funny, there's a guy in jail several years ago, and I was asking him some things about the Bible, and if he knew anything about the Bible, and I said, "Do you know the story of David and Goliath?" He said, "Yeah, Goliath is that dog, isn't it?" I thought, Not that I can recall, but evidently it's a cartoon or something on TV. And that's a 20, 21-year-old young man in America that doesn't know that story. That's amazing. Okay, verse 35 at the paragraph mark. Thus saith the Lord, which giveth the sun for a light by day, and the ordinances of the moon and of the stars for a light by night, which divideth the sea when the waves thereof roar, the Lord of hosts is his name. Okay, so creation, the sun, S-U-N, pictures the Lord Jesus. The moon and the stars, the moon is a picture of the church who reflects the light of the sun. And stars are a picture of soul winners, Daniel chapter 12. Verse 36, if those ordinances depart from before me, the ordinances of the moon, the sun, the stars, saith the Lord, then the seed of Israel also shall cease from being a nation before me forever. Well, that's quite a seal there, quite an evidence. Okay, so there's some scientific proof of the endurance of the nation of Israel. Verse 37, thus saith the Lord, if heaven above can be measured and the foundations of the earth searched out beneath, I will also cast off all the seed of Israel for all that they have done, saith the Lord. Okay, well, they haven't searched out the oceans yet. And I don't think they're going to be able to. Okay, 38, behold, the days come. When you see that, you're dealing millennium, saith the Lord, that the city shall be built to the Lord from the tower of Hananiel unto the gate of the corner, and the measuring line shall yet go forth over against it upon the hill Gerab, and shall compass about to Goeth. And the whole valley of dead bodies, and of ashes, and of all the fields unto the brook of Kidron, unto the corner of the horse gate toward east, shall be holy unto the Lord. It shall not be plucked up nor thrown down any more forever. Okay, so that's the verse 40 is the after effect of Armageddon. Whole valley of dead bodies. Revelation, I think it's 14, talks about the blood that's going to come up to the horse's bridle. Revelation 14. Let's see. Revelation 14, verse 20. And the winepress was trodden without the city, and blood came out of the winepress, even unto the horse's bridle, by the space of 1,600 furlongs. That's 160 miles. About 160 mile section that's going to have blood coming, horse's bridle, what, 4 to 5 feet? That's the 200 million army. Okay, that's the blood. Now, it also mentions back there in Jeremiah ashes, which is interesting, that he mentions some ashes, like somebody's getting torched. You'll find that in Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah 14, verse 12. This is what Indiana Jones and them tried to depict. They probably didn't know this verse in the Bible, but they tried to depict this at the end of that show when them people melted. Okay, Zechariah 14:12. It says, and this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the people that have fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their holes, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. They're being torched right on the spot. As the Lord comes down on his chariot, a white horse, and followed by his pulling his chariot, that thing is going to touch down on Mount Sinai, come up the King's Highway, And then it's going to come right into Israel, east to west. As that thing's coming, floating off the ground about 2 feet, it's going to be mashing the United Nations Army's troops. And it's going to be torching them at the same time as he's shooting out flames, because Jesus Christ is referred to as the Son of Righteousness, S-U-N. Okay, and 2 Thessalonians 2 verse 8 said that the fire is going to devour them. He's going to torch them. And it's like lightning, is what it's like, lightning coming down through there. 2 Thessalonians 2 verse 8. And he's going to torch these guys right on the spot. It says, and then shall that wicked be revealed, when the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. Okay, so he's going to torch him on the spot. Ezekiel 1 verse 4 mentions that there's a yellow bright light and a whirlwind. And the whirlwind, and it's coming out of the north. And that's all a picture of Jesus Christ coming back. Take another one. Revelation 19 mentions that a sharp sword comes out of his mouth. Okay, so that's the second coming of Christ. And so in Jeremiah 31 verse 40, we have the whole valley of dead bodies. Okay, and then it mentions ashes. Okay, and this whole valley, when you read Ezekiel 39, they're going to take 7 months to bury all the bodies. After 7 months, there's going to be some guys that are going to be paid full time to do this. After 7 months, if anybody's out there in that area and they happen to see a finger still hanging around, or, you know, an arm or a ear sitting on the ground, they're supposed to take a stick and stick it in the ground, and whoever, one of the professional buriers, goes and picks the thing up and buries it. You find that in Ezekiel 39. So they obviously, you know, after rain comes in, you know, uncover some more of the body parts. And because at the end of the tribulation, or at the beginning of the millennium, it promises an early and latter rain in the first month, because you're going to have a 3.5 year drought during the tribulation. So to replenish it at the beginning of the millennium, Joel 2 verse 23 mentions an early and latter rain. And so through that time period, the bodies would be kind of washed and parts left in the dirt and everything. Sounds kind of stinky, but everybody would be kind of glad about that, because them people have been killing the Jews for years. They'll be singing praises and glory to God, Revelation 19, when they see the Vatican blowed off the map in 1 hour. Revelation 17, 18 mentions they're going to get blowed off the map in 1 hour, and right after that it has everybody in heaven singing praises. And that'd be a blessing. That'd be a blessing. They've been killing Christians for right and left for years and years and years. And God has been watching that, and he's waiting to push the button. That'd be the second coming. Okay, Jeremiah 32. Probably won't run through the whole thing. The beginning part of Jeremiah 32 is very, very practical. It's very practical, and it shows us the Bible way of buying property. Okay, and so it can be very, it's invaluable information here. It's not out of date at all. It's still something that we should learn from. Okay, to give you a little background, this has been the story here. Is in the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, verse 1. So that means it's 1 year, 1 year before the final captivity of Jerusalem. So 1 year after this business adventure, Jerusalem is conquered for the third and final time. And this begins the 70-year captivity of the Jews in Babylon. So you would tend to think Why would you want to buy property during those times of time events when in 1 year from now it's going to be conquered territory? Well, that's one thing about buying land. When you got a piece of dirt, at least you can live on it through a depression. If you don't got a piece of dirt, you're in the street. That's the advantage of having a piece of dirt. You say, well, it's going to go down in value. Everybody's is going down in value. It doesn't matter. You're all in the same boat. The disadvantage of having a piece of dirt is when the communists come in, they kill the people who own the dirt. They get rid of the farmers. They get rid of the independent farmer, and then they put a brainless guy who's in charge of the collective farms. That's the disadvantage. Okay, but as far as anything goes, buying a piece of dirt is one of the best investments that you could do. Okay, that and a tangible investment is gold or silver, where you could run with a little bit of that, but you don't want to be so tied down with it. I was reading a story about these soldiers where they'd had a bunch of gold strapped on themselves, and they were going to had to run across this. They had to go across this deep water space, and all but two or three of them died because the others wouldn't release the gold. They drowned with it, you know. And so that's the problem with that. Okay, so chapter 32 is very, very practical. Very practical. Verse 1, the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord in the 10th year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, which was the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar. For then the king of Babylon's army besieged Jerusalem. Okay, you'll find that record about this siege. Let's see, in 2 Kings 25. Okay, that siege, remember what a siege is. You have a city, you've got walls around the city, and a siege is when the army sets up troops around the city at all the key positions. Anybody comes out, they either kill them or take them prisoner. Nobody goes in. Obviously, what's going to happen if they don't have an internal water source? They're going to, you know, die of thirst. If they have an internal water thirst or a water source like Jerusalem did, they're eventually going to die of food, lack of food. Now, this siege mentioned in 2 Kings 25 took a year and a half. A year and a half. So it's a long, drawn-out thing. It's a very boring thing for the soldiers. But it's a good way to conquer people without having to do much. And when you come in town and they're all looking skin and bones, you don't have to fight too hard. And a lot of times they fight themselves. So this is a year and a half siege. During this siege is when the Lord told Jeremiah, he said, hey, so-and-so is coming over to you. He's going to come to you. You're in the Huskow here. You're in prison. You're in the Gray Bar Motel. He said that he's going to come to you and he wants you to buy some property. And I want you to buy it. Okay, so that's the idea. So that's rule number one in buying property. Make sure God's involved. Make sure God is the one that directs you to do it. Make sure that he's laid out all the circumstances. Make sure that he is giving you clear evidence that this is what you want to do or what you should do. 32:2. Let's see. Okay, he's in prison. I think I read that. Verse 3. For Zedekiah, king of Judah, had shut him up, saying, wherefore dost thou prophesy and say, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall take it. Okay, so Jeremiah was preaching negative. Zedekiah didn't like that. And Jeremiah also said, and Zedekiah, king of Judah, shall not escape out of the hand of the Chaldeans, but shall surely be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon, and shall speak with him mouth to mouth, and his eyes shall behold his eyes, and he shall lead Zedekiah to Babylon, and there shall be he be until I visit him, saith the Lord, Though ye fight with the Chaldeans, ye shall not prosper. Okay, very detailed what Jeremiah was saying. He stuck his neck out, given prophecy. Prophecy is the way you prove the Bible. And interesting how he says this. He says, okay, first off, he said the city is going to be conquered. Secondly, Zedekiah is going to be captured. Zedekiah is going to see the king face to face, eyeball to eyeball. But when they take Zedekiah to Babylon, they have to lead him. Interesting why he said that it that way. Why didn't they just say he's going to take him to Babylon? They said they had to lead him to Babylon. The reason why he said it that fashion is when you read Jeremiah 52 and I think 39. Jeremiah had been warning Zedekiah, and he's been telling him, he said, hey, humble yourself, go out to the army, humble yourself, and tell them we surrender, and you will go back to Babylon, and you will live a life of luxury. You will not be a king, but you will live a life of luxury. He was scared to do that. So, right before the end of the siege, when Zedekiah, you know, had ate up all that he had, he took a band of men and they tried escaping. And, of course, he got caught. So they brought him back, brought him right in front of the king, eyeball to eyeball, just like Jeremiah said. Brought us two boys in front of him. Jeremiah 52 mentions it. Killed his two boys right in front of his face. Then they poked his eyeballs out. So the last thing that man saw was the death of his two sons. That's why they had to lead him back to Babylon, because he could not see. They blinded him. Okay, obviously that would be bad news for Zedekiah, and he didn't like that preaching. If he would have humbled himself, he would have had his two boys, he would have had his eyes until the day he died. He refused to humble himself. Now, that's a great lesson for us, spiritually speaking. The Lord wants us to humble ourselves unto Him. If we don't humble ourselves unto Him, He will take our spiritual eyesight. And when our spiritual eyesight is gone, we will not be able to lead our families correctly, and we will lose our children. Now, that's how we can look at that, spiritually speaking. Zedekiah had it happen literally. Okay, back in the story. Now verse 6. Here we go into the buying project of a piece of property. Jeremiah said, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, behold, Hanamiel, the son of Shallum, thine uncle, shall come unto thee, saying, buy thee my field that is in Anathoth, for the right of redemption is thine to buy it. So, Hanamiel, mine uncle's son, came to me. Okay, mine uncle's son, so that'd make him his cousin, right? Okay, he came to me in the court of the prison, according to the word of the Lord, and said unto me, buy my field, I pray thee, that is in Anathoth, which is in the country of Benjamin, for the right of inheritance is thine, and the redemption is thine. Buy it for thyself. Then I knew that this was the word of the Lord. Okay, rule number one. Make sure you know beyond a reasonable shadow of a doubt that this is what God wants you to do. He said, I knew this was of the Lord. Now, I know that's, as a human, especially when you like something, we get our emotions involved. And we always see the layout of something, and our emotions run off with our thinking, and then we don't look at all the negatives. When you're buying something, you have to look at all the negatives. Why? Because you're going to have to fix it. So you got to see how much you got to fix. And usually that's the best kind of things to buy, because then you can fix them, because you can get them dirt cheap. Okay, so that's the thing. Make sure the Lord's in it. The worst time to buy a car is when you got the bug. When you got the bug, don't go car shopping. Wait it out. Okay, so that's rule number one. Number two, verse 9, and I bought the field of Hanameel, mine uncle's son, that was in Anathoth, and weighed him the money, even 17 shekels of silver. Notice that real money is money that you weigh. Now, anything works in exchange for property, whatever the seller wants. If he wants 100 pigs for this piece of property, okay, then that works. Okay, however it goes. If he wants 100 green little pieces of paper with 100 zeros on it, and it's got Federal Reserve notes, hey, that satisfies, that's what he wants, that's fine. But in a good economy, money is weighed, gold or silver. There was a letter written, I don't remember the exactly, I wish I had the letter in front of me, written in 1785. Read something like, chaos in the city, blood in the streets, riots are rampant, just people arguing, stealing, looting, blah, blah, blah. Wish I would have never sacrificed for what I see. The letter was written by George Washington in 1785, something like that. 3 years later, or 2 years later, the same man wrote to the same person, and he wrote, peace and tranquility, calmness, complete organization, people working hard, wonderful environment, blah, blah, blah. And what had happened is the Constitution was formed with the gold and silver as the financial basis. That's what brought stability. Okay, and that was the stability of our country. Now, just as in the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, remember that dream where it had gold, silver, brass, iron, and clay? That is exactly where our money has gone in our country. It was gold, gold standard, FDR stole that from us. Went to silver, LBJ stole that from us. Now it's down in, it used to be copper pennies. Now we're down in sandwich coins and piece of paper. That's where it's gone. That's not evolution. That's devolution. Okay, so in a good environment, in a good economy, money is weighed. Okay, obviously that's what they were doing there. And he said in verse 10, and I subscribed the evidence. Very, very important. Get evidence written down. Write everything down. It used to be that a man's word was his bond, but even at that, you still want to write everything down. Okay, and it's subscribed. Signed. Okay, if you sign something in front of three witnesses, that is good enough. It is better to have it signed in front of a notary. And, of course, we got three or four of them in church notary. The advantage of that is if you have something signed, if you make out a will, write it out, and you sign that in front of three witnesses, that's good enough. If someone dies, you don't need to go to probate. You don't need to do any of that stuff. If there's no debts, do everything privately within the family. Get everything written down in a will. Everything just laid out just perfectly as could be. Everybody just follows orders, and everything runs smooth. Okay, if you got that signed in front of three people, the reason why you want three people is that means any of those three can be called as witnesses. You want three in case one or two of them die. But when you sign in front of a notary, that signature is deemed truth forever. When it's signed in front of a notary. Indiana, it's very easy to become a notary. Louisiana, it's very difficult. But a notary has quite a bit of power. Okay, so that's the advantage of that. So he says, subscribe the evidence and sealed it. That's it. notary seal or some type, and took witnesses. Had people there, weighed the money in the balances. So I took the evidence of the purchase, both that which was sealed according to the law and custom and that which was open. Couple types of documents there. Notice, according to the customs of the law. Now, they've been trying to change stuff in our country, change it from common law to this other stuff, and they've been getting away with it, but the common law is still in force, and we could still use that. If you have a family Bible and you write down your kid's birth in there, have the midwife sign it, she witnessed it, that is good enough. That holds up. Okay? You say, well, what if I need to? So get a birth affidavit if you want. Go down to the courthouse, just one piece of paper, or make up your own affidavit. This stuff is really comical. There's one of the men down in Rensselaer, got a bunch of kids, didn't get birth certificates for the last three or four. He decided, well, since they won't let me get out of the system, I'm going to get back in and make them pay the piper. So you try to get a birth certificate. Goes down there. Well, here's a kid standing here, 3 to 4 years old. I get a birth certificate for this kid. Well, how do you know they're born? Right here. You know. And they say, well, we can't give you a birth certificate. You have to go to a judge and get an order from a judge. Oh, okay. So he fills out a hearing, goes in front of a judge. Real, real, real important information. So he's got him, his wife, all the kids. And he says, do you have any witnesses? He said, yep. He said, who's your witnesses? Me. Well, what do you witness? That kid was born on such and such a day. You have any more witnesses? Yeah, my wife. What do you say? That kid was born such and such a day. You got any witnesses? He said, yeah, the next one. He said, Sam? The judge said, well, he said the same thing? Yeah. He said, okay, then I order you get a birth certificate. Big deal. Goes and gets a birth certificate. All you have to do is have a birth affidavit. I was kind of wondering about that. Got Brent and Heidi's passport, Ashley's without a social security number. And on that form, it says, I was wondering about a birth certificate. It says on there, if you don't have that, birth affidavit. Very simple. I got that document, took that home, put it in a file. That's all I needed. Okay, and so all these things are set up. It's just a matter of learning the law. Okay, now what does he do with this evidence? Verse 11. So I took the evidence of the purchase, both that which was sealed according to the law and that which was open. That which was open is what we call public documents. Go to the courthouse. Verse 12. I gave the evidence of the purchase unto Baruch, the son of Neriah, the son of Maaseiah, in the sight of Hanameel, mine uncle's son. Notice everything's in the sight of everybody. Watch this. Everything is open above board. Everybody sees what's going on. No shenanigans. Read the fine print. If you don't like something, cross it out. And even if you do have a contract and you've read over it after the fact, you can still fix it the way you want. You write a notice and demand back to the author of the contract and spell it out the way you believe it is interpreted. If he doesn't answer that notice and demand in 30 days, then you are deemed correct. Why? Because if there's confusion in a contract, it always goes against the author. Why? Because it is deemed that he understands what he's writing. And so the way you clear up the confusion is by a notice and demand. And it's very easy documents. Okay, now notice what he does. He says, in the presence of the witnesses, verse 12, that subscribed the book of the purchase before all the Jews that sat in the court of the prison. And I charged Baruch before them, saying... Baruch is like his secretary of some type. He needed help because he's in prison. So he said, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, take these evidences, This evidence of the purchase, both which is sealed and this evidence which is open. So you've got two different documents here. And put them in an earthen vessel that they may continue many days. Notice it's not in the safe deposit box. The reason why I say that is when the bank closes, what's in the safe deposit box is the bank's. And you'll have to fight and fight and fight if you're going to get it. So find a tree out back or something, or an in-floor concrete, in the concrete floor safe is probably the best if you're on high enough ground where you're not going to get flooded and lose everything. So you got to figure all that out. A church has a safe here, and we got one in Rensselaer. The one in Rensselaer is in-ground safe. There is no professional thief that's going to waste his time trying to get in our safe. There is no amateur thief that's going to get in that safe. If there's a big gorilla that breaks in and he takes it out of the concrete, we're going to let him have the safe. Okay, so and you can get these in-ground safes for about $400 to $500, so it's not too bad. Or you could put it in a little plastic bucket, put some oxygen absorbers in there, and rule number one, don't forget where you bury it. So it's a real headache. It's a real headache. So it's best to do everything private. Everything private. Probate can be done private, just within family. The only reason for probate court is for debt. If there's no debt, there's no need for it. No need for the lawyer to get his little greedy mitts in there and everything. Okay, and that's what we want to do. We want to... the law is on our side. If we just study the law, where you, the parent, can give an inheritance to your children if they're worthy of it. There's no need for it to go to some bureaucrat and some lawyer. They don't need to get a dime of it. It should go. Why do people? I don't understand people that live their whole life and then they give their property to some park. I don't understand that. I can see give it to a church or to your children. But to some state organization, that doesn't register with my noggin. Okay, so these are some real practical things. See how practical the Bible is. Okay, basically, once the price is agreed upon and accepted, the official documents are signed, sealed, and delivered in front of witnesses. The documents are filed as public records and then stored in safekeeping. And that means fireproof ammo boxes are real nice. These little ammo boxes are real nice. Waterproof. And if you got about 100 of them in the basement, they got to figure out which one something's in it. Put a bunch of dirty socks in them or something like that. Okay, but ammo boxes are real nice and waterproof. You get these little fireproof safes, about $25. And set them in a corner in a basement. The ammo box is a little nicer because they're waterproof. Those little safes aren't waterproof. Okay, so see how practical this is. Everything written down, read the contracts. You say, well, I don't understand it. Well, don't sign it if you don't read it. It's amazing to me. When somebody puts something in front of me and they said, sign this, and I take an extra minute to start reading that, they're sitting there looking at me. You want me to sign this, right? Yeah. You want me to agree to this, right? Yeah. If I'm going to agree to it, I got to read it. But so many of us are used to a piece of paper put in front of us, sign it. Read it. Read it. But even at that, if I sign a piece of paper, put a signature on this, and hand it to him, And he walks away and he comes back and shows me that piece of paper. And he says, is that your signature? I don't know. He said, well, you just saw me sign. Yeah, but I didn't see that paper all the time. He could be a real good forger. And so I can't prove beyond a reasonable shadow of doubt that that's my signature. And so very important things to learn. This is very, very practical. Jeremiah shows it. Okay, and I thank God that this is right in the Bible, just laid out. Okay, verse 16. Now when I had delivered the evidence of the purchase unto Baruch, the son of Neriah, I prayed in the Lord, saying, Ah, Lord God, behold, thou hast made heaven and earth, and so forth, so on, down through that line. You read down through that, and you get to wonder, man, Jeremiah probably lost this a year later. Nope. No, he didn't. Jeremiah was given a unique privilege because he was faithful to God. When the Babylonians came in, they said to Jeremiah, they said, Jeremiah, we conquered you people because your people were wicked. The heathen got more sense than the Christian, the Jews back then, professing Christians, you know, if we look at it that way. And he said, we could take you back to Babylon or you could stay here. Whatever you want to do is your choice. Boy, that's a pretty good privilege. And that's because he was faithful. And he said, I think I'll just stay here. And that's what he did. Okay, so that's some of that. Do you have any questions, comments, or we covered? Jeremy?
When you're talking about the tribulation.
Mm-hmm. Back in 31? After those days, verse 33? Verse 33?
I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more.
Oh, okay, in 34?
Okay, the first half of that paragraph is everyone on earth, and then after the colon is just for Israel?
Specifically, yeah, because if you back up to verse 31, that's the new covenant. That's part of the new covenant.
Oh, forgiving their iniquity. And
right. Right. The plural pronoun would be the Jews, Israel as a whole. Anybody else? Okay, how about prayer requests?